So, good morning. Oh my goodness, what a good crowd we have. I'm at the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, which used to be called the Cooperative State Research Education and Extension Service, for those of you who are behind the times on our name. Anyway, I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about what programs we have and some somewhat random highlights of some recent discoveries and some background discoveries that have happened. So a brief outline of what I'm going to talk about is a brief history of climate change-related programs in the last decade, and including challenge areas and change in name and congressionally directed changes, trends of what I think is going on is coming up in the future, highlights and some discovery, and that's from programs. Some projects that I'll highlight, and new and continuing opportunities. I hope I get time for that. I didn't go through this very carefully to know how long it would take. But anyway, so as a part of the history of our programs in 2003, well, first of all, I was running some programs in soil processes. It was called Soil Biology and Soils. Soils and Soil Processes. No, I don't remember what the name is. Soils and Soil Biology was called. Yes, and so there were a lot of proposals would come in having to do with soil carbon and its vulnerability. And so we developed what we called a strategic initiative within our large program, competitive grants program called the National Research Initiative. And it called for global change-related research in all of the NRI programs. Soils proposals were probably the most responsive. And then in 2004, they let me do a new program in carbon cycle science after I'd gotten involved in interagency groups in carbon cycle and in global change in general. There's this whole interagency structure for that. And so also in 2004 and running through 2009 was a program called Air Quality. That was a new program that was developed. So we're moving forward in really addressing some of these issues. One of the priorities of the Air Quality program was greenhouse gas emissions. And so air quality, managed ecosystems, and soil processes were the three programs that really addressed soil carbon from different points of view and relate to climate. So we also started some interagency programs, along with the interagency program in carbon cycle that I mentioned before, that was interagency with NASA and DOE. We also brought NOAA in on some of them and the Forest Service. We also expanded the idea and did some interagency programs on land use change and invasive species related to land use change and climate and ecosystem services. And one of the ecosystem services that was pointed out was carbon sequestration and carbon and greenhouse gas mitigation. So then in 2010, we got renamed. CSREES became the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, and the National Research Initiative became the Agriculture and Food Research Initiative. Along with that, we got a political appointee to direct us, and that person made some decisions on our structure, and that included societally relevant issues as large programs, and among those, we call those challenge areas, and among those is climate change and bioenergy. So the Congress said we weren't really going by the law and addressing the topics that they said we should be addressing in National Research Initiative and AFRI as well. And so we decided to call our program what the topic is, they said. That's renewable energy, natural resources, and environment. We call it RENRE. They changed it in 2014 Farm Bill to BENRE, bioenergy, natural resources and environment. In any case, priorities within that have have focused on fundamental processes, thresholds, carbon and nitrogen and phosphorus cycles, and resilience and CECs, not the cation exchange capacity here. It's chemicals and environmental concern. And then to finish up, we also started partnering with NSF and Earth System Modeling. And some of that modeling involved some of the models that some of you all have worked on to incorporate soil carbon and soil emissions. Also water sustainability and climate, dealing with you know, the issue of soil carbon, and water problems. And then we also, in 2013, had an international call partnering with 13 other countries to sponsor some work for networking and collaborative work internationally on climate change and, in particular, agricultural greenhouse gases. So just say a little bit about the climate and bioenergy challenge areas. The focus has been, up till now, mostly on regional solutions to issues of agriculture and climate change and bioenergy. And the first years included what we call CAPs, Coordinated Agricultural Projects, large multi-million dollar projects, five-year projects with many institutions. And they tended to focus the first few years on commodities and less on, you know, the resources. And but there's always been some aspect of that, the money going there, that was focused on soil carbon and resources. In later years, we didn't have as much money, so we had more standard grants and less of these great big ones. Bioenergy also focused, had the same trajectory in terms of funding, but also within the bioenergy push, the push to increase biofuels, the programs that I ran had to do with what are the environmental consequences of that. And the first call particularly called out carbon sequestration and greenhouse gas implications. I wanted to say just a little bit about the Carbon Cycle Science Program. It's interagency with NASA, sometimes with DOE and NOAA and the Forest Service as well. And it grew out of the interagency program and in carbon cycle and on climate change in general. And I just put this up here because there's some links here that maybe some people can copy down or look at to see the direction it's going. One of the big programs within the carbon cycle program is the interagency program is the large collaborative North American carbon program. So anyone who's doing research on carbon and would like to join the North American Carbon Program, you just go to this website and you can join and let me know you're doing it, so I'll say, yeah, he's cool, or she's cool. I think I'll skip over this. It's just some of the achievements from previous calls in this carbon cycle science program. But generally, you know, increased understanding of what's going on, what's affecting these sinks and sources of carbon flows in the environment, and a lot of them have come down to, hey, we got to pay more attention to the soil, including in when we're talking about dairy pasture management and grazing, finding out that's really important and how grazing strategies can have a big influence, huge influence on soil carbon in those systems. And in 2013/14, sort of bridged the 2 years, we had a call that for the first time called out in specific, that third bullet down there, below ground carbon processes and soil carbon. So we have a lot of projects just starting, pretty major projects looking at some really important issues. And also for the first time we strongly encouraged human activities be included, and that sort of brings in more agriculture for those folks at NASA and such. Okay, so some trends and developments that I've seen over this decade. Growing interest in soils is one of those, and soil, carbon, and nitrogen cycles related to climate. Within the carbon cycle community, scientific community, which is quite broad, it goes well beyond agriculture and soils, there's been just a really large growing interest in how important soils are to figuring this out. It used to be just, you know, below ground processes and it's like a black box. Now they're realizing this is really important, and one of the major gaps in these models for Earth system modeling and climate change. Other tendencies, a greater appreciation for the role of agriculture in this, the fact that nitrous oxide emissions probably a lot of them are coming from soils, and at least 40% are associated with agriculture. Growing interest in methane. I think in the past, it took a while for people to figure out how to study methane, but that's really moved forward. Permafossil carbon, as Ratan mentioned, Arctic programs. Wetlands have been more on the rise in terms of their interest because there's a recognition that they're not necessarily sources. Many of them are actually very strong sinks. Rice to mitigate greenhouse gases. That's something that sort of started out. So when you have an organic soil, you drain it to produce something, that carbon goes into the atmosphere. It turns out, so the idea was, well, let's flood it and plant rice. We're still producing food. We still have an income. And the only issue with that would be methane and nitrous oxide, right? So that can go up. But as it turns out, one of the projects in California studying this, in organic soils, and the higher the organic content, the lower the methane emissions from rice cultivation, and the higher the yields. And so that's sort of speaks for the good potential of rice actually being a way to mitigate. Livestock grazing management, as I said, and manure management are very much on the rise. And then, of course, there's the issue of biochar, either from natural sources, because forest fires are sort of on the increase these days, and the effects on soil processes of that. So a few details on what's going on here. Let's see, what time am I supposed to end? Two more minutes?
No, you have
no. One.
She's
not at 8:50. Okay. Right. So, ag ecosystems, Midwest intensive models out of Colorado was a project we funded to Colorado in 2008 and developed protocols. Forest ecosystems, fire and beetle kills and their effects on the soil carbon and then the sinks and sources. The issue of priming, our programs funded a lot of fundamental work on that and continue to look at that. And there's a project to Johannes Lehmann just starting where he's going to look at how, really getting down to the mechanisms of how biochar might change, increase positive priming or negative priming, and long-term fertilization and biomass removal effects. Another major trend is in microbial ecology. SIP is a stable isotope probing of DNA, and it's a good way to actually look at the functioning and processes in identifying organisms that can't be isolated. Most soil organisms can't be cultured. And so that's a way to get at that, and that's made some big advances. And we funded some of that, just getting folks started. Of course, they've moved on and got more money from NSF. Biochar from natural fires, a big question as to whether it's negative or positive priming. We partially sponsored the International Soil Carbon Network, which I encourage you all to look at. Subsoil carbon and the fate of carbon in thawing permafrost has been noted, made some big advances. Sarita Frey at the University of New Hampshire did a study that we funded looking at warming studies of carbon and noticed that with chronic warming, it stimulates soil respiration, as was feared, and nitrogen cycling, but nitrogen fertilization tends to inhibit decomposition. But one of the things that she also noted was that fungal biomarkers were reduced with the prolonged, bacteria gaining, fungi losing space. The importance of nitrogen on soil carbon cycling has been noted, and there are a couple of studies here that I have called out, recent studies, looking at archaea and how and their reaction to as one of the ammonia oxidizing families and how they have a different temperature dependence. And most of the models thinking of temperature dependence are working with bacteria and not archaea, and so that's important. And then, of course, fungi versus bacteria in terms of in terms of denitrification, the fungi tends to produce nitrous oxide, which is global warming, and what we want them to do is produce N2, and then a lot of different temperature effects on that. I have some data to show here. Stuart Brandy and his student Callan Bach, I don't remember her first name, at New Hampshire. We're looking at the KBS, Kellogg Biological Station, and noted that despite the fact that way fewer carbon inputs were into the organic, long-term organic managed systems, and the organically managed systems were tilled many times, as the conventional was mostly no-till or maybe once, not even once a year. But the organic plots are still accumulating more organic carbon in the soil, and part of that is due, they think it's due mainly to the microbial community and the efficiency of growth, the microbial growth efficiency. And here they did labeling of the carbon in these two kinds of soils, and that shows that the microbial biomass is way higher in the organic versus the conventional. Another experiment that I wanted to highlight on an oxisol in Hawaii, Susan Crow and her colleagues working on this, and they were looking at biochar. And this simply shows, you can read what the results are down at the bottom. Basically, the biochar decreased the size of the labile carbon pool, so what's going to be oxidized quickly, and the apparent temperature sensitivity of organic fertilizers was reduced to normal. And then another one, sort of landscape looking one by Diego Riveros Irecki at University of Nebraska, also shows differences in the diversity of the microorganisms in with elevation and moisture, and they found that soil moisture was the main contributing factor to these microbial communities and how they produce what their microbial growth efficiency is. So soil microbial composition differed among highland and upland soils. Microbial communities had a strong positive correlation with soil water content, and that was correlated to carbon dioxide efflux and, very importantly, methanogens detected in riparian soils, but methanotrophs were detected in both upland and riparian soils. So here again is just showing, I think this is from Texas, Jennifer Moore Crucera, looking at soil carbon in conservation reserve program soils that have been reverted to non-conservation reserve, and what's happening to the microbial communities and the accumulated carbon, and they see that it's related to fungi, as the others showed, and microbial growth efficiency. And so these are some of her conclusions about enzymatic activity and microbial community composition, how it is altered when you go from sort of this native prairie in the case of Texas and start turning it back into microbial crops. I wanted to, just before I close, do I have a minute? Mention that the AFRI Climate Change RFA will be coming out this year, before December, I hope. We have to, it's on hold because the lawyers are working out how it addresses the Farm Bill. Global Research Alliance, I'd encourage you, if you're interested in international collaborations, contact me, particularly in the area of soil carbon and nitrogen, but this is sort of describes what the structure is and the different groups you could get involved with. The Carbon Cycle Interagency Program and the North American Carbon Program, as well as the International CARBO-NA are important, and I also encourage you to get involved in the International Soil Carbon Network. All right, thanks.
Hold on, just don't worry.